This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday. We'll begin our hour of old-time radio crime with Unit 99 this week. We'll hear their episode from August 23rd, 1957, Shopping Center Burglary. After that, it's This Is Your FBI and Robert Perry Impersonator, their story from August 10th, 1945.
KMA-907, Sacramento Police. Unit 99, are you in the clear?
Unit 99 to KMA-907. Unit 99, Sergeant Meredith, 909, in service, on the air. This is Sergeant Dan Meredith of Unit 99 at Headquarters, Police Department, City of Sacramento, California. My detail is to ride in Unit 99, our tape recorder-equipped radio car, and to respond whenever the dispatcher transmits a signal to one of our other units on duty somewhere in the city. At the scene, we make the recordings for this program. Now, to tell you more about Unit 99, here is our chief, James V. Hicks, Sacramento Police.
The job of a police officer is your protection. The cases you hear on this radio program are real cases. The police are real. The victims and the criminals are real. We are glad to provide Unit 99 and Sergeant Meredith so that you will hear how the police of a great city work night and day for your protection. Make no mistake about it. There are no actors on these tapes. They are real from beginning to end. Now to Unit 99 and Sergeant Dan Meredith on duty.
Unit 9. Unit 9, 940 detectives at the south corner of the Fruit Ridge Shopping Center in the rear. A possible 460 in progress. Come in with lights out. Unit 4. Cover in 4, code 2. Unit 5. What is your location? KMA-907.
Detectives are requesting a unit to approach with lights out.
26834.
Unit 4 is responding to the call. Unit 9 was also contacted. Let's go out in that area.
We're 20th and Broadway. You still want us standing by?
Unit 5, you go out there too on that. The rear of the Fruit Ridge Shopping Center. Stop in.
Check.
We're just arriving. The officers are all around it. Let's get out. All sides are pretty well covered. Hello, McManus. The detectives are around back. One of the detectives is on the roof. It's believed to be a burglary in progress here. It's pretty cold. We have about a 40-mile-an-hour wind out here. In case you hear that noise, that is the wind blowing against the microphone. We'll stand by until we can get into the inside. Hello, sign.
We come cruising out through here, and we hear this heavy beating in here. It's like sounds like somebody working on a safe. Now we've got the whole place around it, trying to get in. Looks like more like the hideaway job.
You haven't seen any force entry yet, have you?
Not yet.
Okay, they're trying to get you that information as to the owner.
Yeah, we called in for the owner to come out here and let us in the place.
We'll stand by.
Here's where they're beating. It's coming out of there.
Was it still going on?
Yeah, you'll hear it in a minute.
Let's get over by there. You mean over by this gate?
Oh, upstairs. It sounds just like somebody using a sledgehammer, and then it sounds like somebody was just working on the The dial of the safe itself, punching it.
Well, punching it, huh?
What'd you say, Mac?
Get in there.
You still you think they're still in there? Everything's surrounded here.
That's the only way we're gonna get in.
You're the only one up there, Mac?
No, there's a uniform officer up here.
Okay. Let's go around the front. Well, Mac Alexander, one of the detectives on the roof, has found the hole which was punched through the roof. He believes that the culprits are still on the inside. We have all four sides of the building surrounded. Also, the roof is pretty well covered now. It's quite a large store here, department store. I believe there are two detectives and two officers covering the roof. We have about 10 officers on the outside. Ropes?
Yes.
Do you know whether or not the owner is on the way?
Well, they tried to notify the owner, but apparently they couldn't contact him. So they're going to have to go into the building the same way that the burglars are in there.
Where are they? Got the block come up on top so you can't get in, or what?
No, they got the whole attic up there.
Yeah?
You've got to get in some way.
Yeah,
they came down through the roof.
Yeah?
You need a rope. You need a rope to get in from the attic down.
How are they figuring on getting out of there?
Probably going out through that shipping door over on the other end there.
It's all covered over there.
Yeah, oh yeah.
We have can't seem to contact the owner. And we have to get us. And we believe, I can see from outside here, the office is on the mezzanine section of the building, no doubt where the safe is. I see a flashlight inside, probably from our boys. I see somebody now coming through the mezzanine there. It looks like an officer. Yes, it is an officer. With the rope that we have, we'll be able to drop down inside. And after getting inside, we'll have the doors open, or one of them. Well, we're going to try. I think we can open it from the inside.
Yeah, they have a...
He's having a little difficulty there. It's too much of a drop. He's still lodged on the edge of that overhang. Officer is still trying to get down. They still haven't to receive the rope from above. I don't think he can make it. That's too much of a drop there. Unless he gets help from someone else in there. He's going to try it. He's lowering himself. If he can get down to that partition there that he can stand on, there's a space of about 10 feet or 8 to 10 feet. He's hanging now. He's pretty close to the edge of that partition. He's on. He's in. He's in. It's tall Jim Marty, one of our patrol officers. He just received his shotgun. He's assisting another officer, his partner, down in. Both of them are inside now. Let's see if we can get their attention, open this door. Down here. Here's the manager. Yeah. We have two officers in there now. Just got down in. See, they're on the floor now.
That's like these are.
Is this the your office up there in the mezzanine?
Yeah.
And is your safe back in that
house? Yeah, it's back.
You want to stand by outside? Okay, check everything now. We're inside.
Right. Yeah, it's open on the other side, on the south side.
On the south side, you can get in. Those are the officers on the outside talking through the door. Check behind everything. Let's go through here. Okay, let's go up by the office. Huh? I don't know yet whether we're going up now and check it. Oh, they have somebody in the office, two of them. Yeah, they got him. You got, where were they hiding? Right in that back room? Put the cuffs on these fellas. You got any tools around?
They're in the room now.
Fine. Now, where are you from?
San Bernardino.
San Bernardino?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of record do you have?
None.
None?
How many times you fall, anyway? Huh? How many times you fell? You know what I'm talking about.
No, I don't.
You ever been to San Quentin, Folsom, or anything? Never fell in your life, huh?
Huh?
No.
Walk, carried you 2 or 3?
You got no record, nothing.
What kind of a car did you use tonight?
Didn't have any. We hooked rides.
You hooked a ride with all these tools? Let's go in and check the safe. This is the other one. What kind of record do you have?
Not too good.
Not too good. Well, what kind of record is that?
Robbery.
And what else?
Robbery.
How many times?
I fell once.
We came down.
I fell twice. There. One was juvenile.
Well, how old are you now?
I'm 23.
23.
Got him back in here.
All this money here, Camper, did you find this on these fellows?
Lopes and I searched this fellow here, and this is what he had in his pockets.
Mm-hmm.
How many?
Just the two of you fellas?
Well, we got to get another shakeout.
Now, let's check the safe in here, see what damage they might have done. See, here's a crowbar, rope,
brace and bit,
small sledgehammer.
Exactly.
They have everything. Or they've got part of the safe, which is mounted in a concrete square, half chiseled and broken away. This was probably, and no doubt, where all the noise came from that was heard outside. Gloves, flashlights, cars. Mac Alexander, you and your partner, Zine, heard this as you were going by. Was that it?
Making a routine patrol behind these buildings. We heard this pounding noise. We shut off the motor, stopped, listened. It kept up, so we called for more squad cars, more assistance. We had to come in through the same hole they put in the roof, drop down on a rope to get back here to where they were.
Here we have about a three-quarter rope, brand new. With it is a knapsack and some clothing, old clothing.
This is apparently what they carry their tools in. It's
A knapsack. So.
Old GI bag. Yeah, here's a drill still in it. That appears to be the drill they used on the roof coming through. Here's some more chisels.
Yeah.
And a wrench.
Yeah, I guess they were figuring on being here for quite some time. Tonight being Saturday, the place would be closed on a Sunday all day tomorrow, too.
Well, they certainly have the tools we put in the
board.
Keep
this door open.
You come through this door, Lopes?
Yes.
Where were they hiding, or where were they?
One of them was standing just right about here, just at the edge of the door, and the other one was behind the door. When I kicked the door, I knocked them both off balance, I guess.
Good. Did they threaten you in any manner?
No, they put their hands in the air immediately.
Good. Well, I knew that this place was surrounded.
Apparently, they had that impression because of all the voices and so forth.
Yeah. Did you find anything else on their person?
Just that money and rolled coins that this party here had on his person when we...
Where did you get this money that was found on you? Out of the cash register drawer?
Yeah.
And how about these other drawers around here, the cash registers. I see one drawer is in there where you were working. Where'd you get that?
The same one.
The same one?
Yeah.
So how long have you been working on this safe tonight?
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. You've been in there for about 2 hours and say 2 hours and a half, 2 hours and 45 minutes. Is that right?
That's it.
Have you ever tried a safe before?
No.
Why is it that you tried one tonight?
Broke.
You're broke. Did you plan this with your partner? Did you plan this pretty well in advance with your partner here?
No, I just met him. I don't know.
When did you meet him?
Saturday.
How long ago?
I met him on the road coming up here on the highway.
From where?
Huh?
From where?
I've been traveling all over. Man.
Well, where did you pick him up or where did he pick
you up? I just met him on the highway walking along.
Walking?
Yeah.
Where did you get all these tools tonight?
I had them for a long time.
You had them? Those are brand new tools.
6 months.
Those are brand new. They haven't been used.
Yes, they have, too.
Where'd you get them?
Did you phone in the office? Yeah.
I bought them at Surplus.
Hey, Joe, you want to take this? You want to take him in? And Camper, you going to take him in?
Right.
Okay.
An efficient police department must have a high degree of mobility. You noted, I am sure, that in this case, patrol units converged on the scene within a few minutes of the first alarm, and at least 10 officers were in and around the building. Further questioning of the suspects revealed a third participant outside the building in a car. Although he fled when the officers arrived, he was arrested in Fresno. The three admitted this and several other burglaries and were sentenced to the state penitentiary.
Unit 99.
99, go ahead.
924, second floor.
924, second floor.
Okay, 99, came in on a 7.
I've been expecting that call. We're going to question a burglary suspect. This is the fellow who staggered into the sheriff's office with a bullet in his chest, claiming he was shot in Southside Park. Later, he admitted a friend shot him while they were examining a gun. Now he's implicated in the burglary. Rogers and Mac Alexander are going to see what they can get out of him.
Dan, you know this man that shot himself or said another fellow shot him? We've got some more additional information on this boy, and we're going over to talk to him now. You want to come along?
You and Rogers going.
Right.
Fine, yeah.
Fine, how are you?
How's that bullet? They ever taken it out yet?
No.
Is it bothering in you?
No.
Well, we've got a little information here in which we understand that you're involved in a burglary here in town, at least one that we know of. I don't know if you want to tell us about it.
I don't know nothing about it myself. That's why the cops told me that I was involved in one, but I don't know nothing about no burglary.
Well, we have your partner in. He admits it, and he names you as his accomplice.
Well, I can't help what my partner say. I don't know what he's talking about myself.
Everything else he has told us has checked out to be the truth.
I wouldn't know why he would have implicated me.
He's never been mad at you, has he, or want to cause you any trouble?
I wouldn't know that.
Where'd you get those guns?
Like that, as I told a cop of the day that we posted, we bought them right there.
Where'd you buy them?
My guy.
What guy?
I don't know him.
Whereabouts did you buy them from?
Down on 4th.
4th where?
4th between L and Capitol.
Was he a white man or a colored man?
He was a colored man, about 36, I guess.
What was his weight?
I guess he weighed about 180, something like that.
How tall was he?
About your size.
What was he wearing?
I wouldn't pay no attention to what he was wearing.
How much did you give him for the guns?
I gave him $35 for both.
Who was with you at the time that you bought them?
Me and my partner supposed to be.
You didn't buy the guns, did you?
Yeah, I bought them.
Your partner, he implicates you as the one in on the burglary as well as the guns.
I can't say what I can't help what my partner say.
Well, why should he get you and finger you on this job? He could have kept his mouth shut, too.
I can't help what my partner
say. He was with you at the time of the shooting.
So was lots more people with me at the time of the shooting.
But what do you want these guns for in the first place? You're not supposed to possess a gun.
As like guns.
How come your partner said that you say you gave $35 for the guns and your partner says he gave $7 for the gun?
I can't help what my partner said. He was there at the time, but he wasn't in his right mind.
What do you mean, not in his right mind?
Well, we have been drinking a little bit.
Well, even if you did buy the guns, as you say, that small price that you gave for them, doesn't that indicate to you that they were probably hot, stolen guns?
No.
They in new condition like that?
No.
It doesn't?
Have you been working?
Yes, I work. Once in a while.
Where?
I was working down at Carlock.
Carlock doing what?
Washing cars.
What kind of a salary did you get down there?
$1 an hour.
And you could afford to go out and buy two guns for $35?
Why not? Money's made to spend, isn't it?
Why did you buy these guns?
By somebody I wanted to give one of them to.
Well, how about the other one?
I was going to keep one of them.
Why?
As I said before, I like guns.
That's not a very good reason. You know that yourself.
That's the best reason I didn't think of at the time. People buy what they like, isn't it?
Well, that's rather hard for us to believe. You know, you lied to us at first about being shot in the park. Then you changed your story to getting shooting yourself. Then you changed it again to getting accidentally shot when you and your friend were playing with those guns. Now, as I said before, what he has told us about this burglary has checked out. And he names you as his partner. Now, who do you think we're going to believe?
You're going to believe him, probably.
I think we will.
We have no alternative.
What's he charged with now?
Violation of parole and burglary.
This man, although he had been implicated in a burglary by his associate, steadfastly denied the crime. He did, however, admit possession of a gun, which, as an ex-convict, placed him in violation of the law, as well as in violation of his parole. The case is still pending. I sincerely hope that you have enjoyed your ride with Unit 99 tonight, and that you will join us for another tour of duty.
This is Unit 99 in Sacramento, California. These on-the-scene tape recordings were provided by the Sacramento Police Department and were made on duty by Sergeant Dan Meredith in Unit 99. Your host is Chief James V. Hicks of the Sacramento Police Department. Be with us when once again you will hear...
Sacramento Police. Unit 99, are you in the clear?
Unit 99 to KMA 907. Unit 99, Sergeant Meredith, 909, in service, on the air.
Unit 99. With Sergeant Dan Meredith in service on the air, will be heard again next week at this same time and over this same station. Join us then for another interesting on-the-spot report of actual happenings as they were tape recorded by members of the Sacramento Police Department. The events described are real. The voices of the people heard are the actual voices of those involved in the police investigation. Police officers, detectives, victims, suspects. These are not actors. These are the actual people involved. Unit 99 is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Thank you.
This is your FBI. This is your FBI, an official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, presented as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. To your FBI, you look for national security, and to the Equitable Society for financial security. These two great institutions are dedicated to the protection of you, your home, and your country. Tonight, the story of a crime against society. Impersonation.
In the course of an ordinary year, the FBI handles big cases and small cases. Big cases like the trapping of the German saboteurs who were sent here to steal the secrets of the atomic bomb. And small cases... well, small cases such as the one you're going to hear about tonight. The important thing about tonight's case is not the sum of money involved or even the people involved, for the criminals are petty thieves. The important thing is that the FBI took as much time and effort as it did on this comparatively minor infraction of the law. No case is too big for the FBI, and none is too small if it violates a federal statute under the FBI's jurisdiction. Our story tonight opens in a tourist cabin on the outskirts of a small town near New York. It is early in the morning, and a pleasant, white-haired old lady is talking to her son.
Robert?
Huh?
Can I help you with anything?
No, I'm all set, Mom.
Come here, let me look at you.
Okay.
Well, nice and neat. Just straighten your tie a little.
Sure, Mom, sure.
Always look your best before you go out to do business.
Sure.
That was one of your father's rules. That was one of the reasons he was such a grand success. He always...
How's the time now?
Oh, that looks fine.
Well, I'd better get going.
Wait, son.
Huh?
You'd better take this along with you. Yes.
What do I need that for?
It was your father's gun, Robert.
Mom, it's not that kind of a job.
I want you to take it anyway. Your father always carried it when he began a new venture. He was so sentimental.
Okay, Miss Barrett.
Oh, that's a good boy.
I'll see you later, Mom.
Robert? Huh? You forgot something.
What?
Come here, son. Have a good day, Robert.
Yes, sir.
You're John Gordon?
Yeah.
My name is Perry, government inspector.
Government? Oh, well, come on in.
Thanks.
Emily?
Yes, John?
Emily, this is Mr. Perry, government inspector.
Oh.
This is my wife.
Oh, how do you do, Mr. Perry?
Well, what can I do for you, sir?
I'm afraid I have some very bad news for you two.
What?
Bad news?
It's about those white leghorns you had delivered yesterday.
Yes?
I took a few from the crates as they were being unloaded and sent them out to the laboratory.
Well, what's the bad news?
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to condemn all of your chickens.
Condemn them?
Why?
Two of them showed signs of tuberculosis.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, that couldn't be.
Our reports are never wrong, Mr. Gordon.
Couldn't the chickens be treated, fixed up some way?
I'm afraid not.
What can we do, Mr. Perry?
Well, you can sue the people you bought them from. And the government service will stand behind you. Oh, by the way, have you got a lawyer?
No. We haven't any money either.
That's a shame. Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. You both look like honest people. I'll loan you enough to retain a lawyer.
Well, now, Mr. Perry,
Let me make you out a check.
Well, now, I don't think you... Well, really, this is really very nice of you, Mr. Perry.
Perry, I don't think we ought to...
There's my check for $50. You can pay me when you get your money back for the chickens.
Oh, Don't know how we can thank you, Mr. Perry.
Oh, don't mention it. Oh, Mr. Gordon, have you got a man around the farm who can help me load the chickens onto my truck?
No, but I'll help you myself. Come on, Emily.
Yes.
Mr. Perry helped us. Now let's us help him.
No one was to blame because this petty crook had successfully impersonated the federal official. No one was to blame, but it was important that Robert Perry be apprehended, because his brazen theft had been a sudden catastrophe for the farmer and his wife. Had wiped out 10 years of hard work. Because women are more suspicious than men, it was Emily Gordon who telephoned the FBI. Telephoned them and told her story. A short time later, Emily and John Gordon were at the FBI's New York office.
This man impersonated a government inspector, Mr. Gordon?
Yes, sir. That's what he said he was.
You try to give me as much of a description of him as you can?
Well, he was about 40 years old.
And he was kind of stocky, John.
Yes.
How tall would you say he was?
About 5'10".
And he wore glasses.
Only when he wrote the check, Emily.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
How about his hair and his clothes? What was he wearing?
Well, had kind of brown hair. He was wearing a blue suit.
Mm-hmm.
How about the truck he was driving?
It was a 1940 Chevrolet.
How do you know so exactly?
Well, Bill Miller up the road from us has one.
See?
Mr. Perry's truck was painted brown, and he didn't have any writing on the sides.
This is really asking too much, but you didn't happen to notice the license plate number, did you?
Oh,
no.
I did. I don't know what the whole number is, but it started with a 1 and a 3 and a 5. Yes, that's it, I'm sure. 1, 3, 5.
Well, that's fine. That'll be a big help.
Hi, Dad.
Oh, come on in, Bill. Got anything?
Your hunch was right. I called the bank. No one named Robert Perry has an account there.
Say.
I guess we'd better send out a teletype.
Yes, alert all retail and wholesale chicken dealers within 100 miles. Mm-hmm. Send Perry's description and a description of the truck.
Right.
Maybe we can give Mr. Perry a little indigestion from too much chicken.
Driving too fast for you, Mom?
Oh, no, no.
Were you dozing off, Mom?
No, just thinking.
About what?
About your father. Oh, he'd have been very proud of you today, son.
Thanks, Mom.
You did a fine job. Now, isn't this better than passing checks?
Yeah, I guess it is.
Those places where you were passing checks were always looking for dishonesty. That's because they were dishonest themselves.
Uh-huh.
Yes, your father always said, if it's larceny you're thinking of, you're much better off dealing with honest people.
Yeah. One thing bothers me, though, Mom.
When
I passed a check, I had cash. Now we got chickens. What do we do with them?
Why, we drive to Waterbury and sell them. That's easy, isn't it?
Yeah, but who do we sell them to?
Now, don't worry about that.
Why, have you got a customer?
Certainly. When I was in Waterbury yesterday, I took care of that.
Oh.
Yeah, I told the man I had some chickens to sell. Told him I was closing down my farm.
Didn't he ask you why?
Yeah. I told him that my son was going into the army and I had to sell out, you see.
Mom, I guess you're the smartest mother a fella ever had.
Fortunately for the FBI and all other law enforcement agencies, the human brain has channels. And ideas tend to run along the same line time after time. It accounts for the odd fact that some thieves, like Robert Perry, love to pass bad checks. Bad checks are always returned, and this bad check was to haunt Robert Perry. For the next morning in the New York offices of the FBI, Special Agents Baker and Webster were looking at a report from Washington. A report on Robert Perry's bad checks.
How far back does he go?
Over 10 years. Caught once in the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he happened to have this much of a record. Did 3 months. Since then, he's been working in spurts.
Anything else besides the bad checks?
No. Kind of puzzles me. This isn't his kind of a job. His father maybe, yes, but the old man's dead.
His father was a thief?
Yes, his mother too.
Well...
Mr. Perry can trace his family tree all the way back to Alcatraz. Hello, Baker speaking. You have? Good, where? Waterbury. Hold on to it. We're leaving now. Come on, Bill.
What's up?
The Waterbury police have picked up Perry's truck. Grab your hat. Let's get going. Hello, Sergeant. I'm Baker, New York office, FBI.
Oh, how are you?
This is Bill Webster.
Hello, Sergeant.
How do you do, sir? Well, gentlemen, somebody just called to claim the truck.
Perry?
No, a legitimate fellow.
Who is he?
A chicken dealer named Crawford from right here in Waterbury.
How did he get hold of it?
I'll let him tell you that. He's right in here. Mr. Crawford?
Yes?
Mr. Crawford, these gentlemen are special agents of the FBI.
How are you, gentlemen?
How do you do, Mr. Crawford? Would you mind telling us how you happened to get hold of that truck?
I bought it. Same time I bought the chickens.
From whom?
A real nice old lady. She came in to see me on Tuesday. Said she had to sell her farm because her son was going into the army. She reminded me of my mother.
Nice old lady. Bill.
What?
I think this nice old lady is Perry's mother.
Yes.
Mr. Crawford, this is very important. Was there a man with this nice old lady?
Yes.
Did he look about 40 years old, pretty stocky, about 5 feet 10 inches tall, wearing a blue suit? Did he have brown hair?
Yes, that's the fellow who was with her.
Where did they go?
Why, after I bought the truck, the old lady asked me if I'd drive him to the railroad station.
What train did they take?
Did she say where they were going?
They took the 521 out of here. She said they were going to New York. They're in New York by now.
Well, we better get down there before that nice old lady sells somebody the Brooklyn Bridge.
We momentarily close the file on Robert Perry, impersonator. We will return to this case in just a moment. Now, will you join the Equitable Society in a salute to the United States Merchant Marine, to the more than 100 privately operated American steamship companies, and to the bold and hardy merchant seamen who sail under the American flag. These companies and these men are the inheritors of a great tradition that goes back to the Yankee whalers from old New Bedford and Nantucket Town. They are the spiritual heirs of the daring crew that drove the tall-masted clipper ships round the Horn. And in this war, they have written new and glorious entries into the records of American seamanship. From Murmansk to the Philippines, undaunted by minefields, suicide planes, and wolf packs of submarines, they have delivered the cargoes on which our armed forces depend. Without these gallant vessels, America would have been forced to fight a defensive war. So here's to the ships and the men who operate and man them. May they be as successful in the years of peace that lie ahead as they are fearless in war. For many generations, there has been a close bond between the American Merchant Marine and the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. Thousands of operators and sailors are members of our society. Hundreds of the ships they sail were launched from shipyards in which Equitable Society funds have long been invested. And thousands of the wartime cargoes they transport come from factories that Equitable dollars help build. For in wartime, Equitable Society dollars have been fighting dollars. And at all times, they are security dollars for you, your home, and your country. And now, back to the file on Robert Perry, impersonator.
In every case the FBI works on, the criminal has the advantage in the beginning. That advantage is the element of surprise. The criminal is the one who calls his shot. Once a crime has been committed, though, the FBI begins to move, begins to close the doors of escape. But first, they must find the criminal. In a city like New York, a city with 7 million population, it is almost impossible to find two inconspicuous people, two people like Robert Perry and his mother. It is almost impossible to locate them in New York if they are in New York. It is impossible to locate them in New York if they are, as Robert Perry and his mother were, in a small tourist cabin in southern New Jersey.
Well, Mom, the weatherman is on our side.
Yes, it's a beautiful day.
I think I'll go swimming.
Mr. Haskell got his delivery of chickens yesterday, son.
Oh, Mom, let's take a little rest.
Not on vacation, son.
Haskell is an apple on a tree. We can pick him whenever we want.
Your father always said strike while the iron is hot.
Oh, those were different times.
Oh, times never change in our business.
Now, look, Mom, why don't we settle down someplace?
Oh, I can't settle down.
Why not?
Well, I never want to stay in one place that long.
Oh, but you're getting older now.
Your father always said the person's as old as he feels.
Okay, I guess I better go to work then.
Son.
Huh?
I meant to talk to you.
About what?
I found a checkbook in your blue suit.
Mom, I haven't cashed a check.
There was one missing.
Oh, I gave it to that farmer up in Connecticut.
Why?
Well, I felt sorry for him. He didn't have any money to hire a lawyer.
But, son, you left a calling card. I asked you.
You asked me not to cash any checks. I didn't. I gave one away.
Well, it's done now. And your father always said there was no point in crying over spilled milk.
I'll see you later, Mom.
Robert?
Huh?
You forgot something.
What?
Come here, son. Have a good day.
It is impossible to help some people. A sign will read wet paint, but some people get paint on their clothes. A sign on the highway will read slow down, curve ahead, but some people get killed. A warning is issued by the FBI, but some people, some stubborn, self-sufficient people, get robbed. You've seen cards with a criminal's picture and his description. Those cards are called identification orders. Despite the fact that every chicken dealer in the East had gotten an identification order on Robert Perry, he was not caught. Twice in the next month, Perry and his mother worked their swindle again. In the New York offices of the FBI, Special Agents Baker and Webster were going over the latest reports.
I don't understand why those identification orders didn't work. Both farmers got them. They admitted that.
Yes, and he followed the pattern exactly both times. He's always been a government inspector, and the chicken disease has always been tuberculosis.
And don't forget Mom. Good old Mom has always sold the chickens because her son was going in the Army.
I don't know how we can make it any easier for the farmers.
We can't, unless we tell them not to answer the door.
Of course, the people who got stuck are not the farmers. They got their chickens back. The legitimate chicken dealer who buys the loot, all he winds up with is a truck.
That's it.
What?
The truck. That's the angle we've been overlooking.
What about the truck?
It's a legitimate purchase every time.
You're right.
Every time Perry sells one of the trucks, he and his mother come back down to New York.
That means they're buying their trucks here.
I think we've got something, Dan.
Yes.
Got one of the Perry identification orders in your desk?
Yes, but we'll need more than one.
No, let's not take another chance that people won't read them.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to call on every second-hand truck dealer in New York.
I'll go with you.
Okay, let's move.
For 3 days, three long, weary days, Special Agents Baker and Webster interviewed truck dealers. The response was always the same. Sorry, liked to help, but never saw the man. Sorry, I never saw the man. Then, on the fourth day...
I know this is the right way to do it, Dan, but if we don't find Perry's trail pretty soon...
I know. I keep seeing secondhand trucks in my dreams.
Here's the used car lot.
Yes. I'll get out on your side.
Okay.
That looks like someone in charge.
Yes.
Yes, gentlemen?
How do you do, sir? My name is Baker. I'm from the FBI.
The FBI?
Yes. Here are my credentials.
Oh, I see.
This is Mr. Webster.
How do you do?
How do you do? This is an investigation of some sort, gentlemen. I run my business clean. No black market.
We're not checking on black market operations.
Take a look at this picture, Mr. Turner.
Uh-huh.
Ever see that man before?
I think so. His face is familiar. But I see so many people.
Try to remember.
If he was here, he was probably with a nice old lady.
Oh, sure. I remember them now.
You do? When were they here?
Well, let's see. Today's Friday. He was here Wednesday. That's it, Wednesday afternoon.
Did he buy a truck?
Mm-hmm. Paid me cash, too.
You're lucky.
What do you mean, lucky?
Sometimes he pays by check.
I see. No, he paid me cash, and they drove right out of here in the truck.
They didn't by any chance say where they were going.
No, they didn't. Oh, now, wait a minute.
Yeah?
I'm trying to think. He asked me for the best road to Albany.
Albany?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Turner.
Oh, not at all, sir.
Dan, let's whip down to Grand Central and grab the next train north.
Right.
A woman's place is in the home, so let's find a home for Mrs. Parrott.
Albany, New York, has been an important American city since the completion of the Erie Canal in 1825. It is the capital of New York State, has a population of 561,000. It is a city of steep hills and lovely scenery. And on the outskirts of Albany, you'll find lush farmland and lots of chickens. In addition to all of these things, Albany had on this particular day, in the FBI field office, two special agents, two hard-working agents named Baker and Webster.
Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Have any luck?
No.
I checked the local police, and they haven't spotted Perry's truck yet.
I went up to the Chamber of Commerce and checked all of the big chicken dealers by phone. No luck either.
Well, where do we go from here?
I think we got all the holes sealed up. Let's just wait for Perry to try to get through.
Well, maybe we'll get some help in the identification orders.
Could be. We certainly sent enough of them out.
Sometimes it looks as if the people who get the IOs must make their ads and tear them up.
Bill.
Huh?
We're missing a bet.
What's that?
IOs are also put up in railroad stations. That's what made me think of it.
Think of what?
We ought to be at the railroad station, not here.
Why, to catch Perry as he's leaving town?
No, but you remember that first farmer, Gordon?
That was 1,000 years ago. What about him?
Remember, he said that Perry told him he had seen the chickens unloaded at the railroad station the day before.
Yes, and he must have been telling the truth.
That's right, otherwise he wouldn't have known about the delivery. Bill, I've got a hunch that Perry's waiting for us. Never saw this fellow, huh?
Nope. We don't let anybody hang around this platform unless they got business here, Mr. Baker.
Have you had any really big deliveries of chickens the last few days?
Well, I guess so. I have to look it up.
From Thursday on.
Thursday, huh? Well, let's see. well, here's one. There's a couple here. There's another batch here. Two more here. Let's see, that's 15 altogether.
Let's copy down the names and addresses of the farmers.
Right, then we'll make a tour. If we get lucky...
We're overdue.
If we can only get lucky, we'll be waiting when Perry knocks on the door.
And that's one date I don't want to stand up.
Well, it worked again, Mom.
Hey, it'll work every time, son. It's foolproof.
This last one was the softest touch yet.
Yeah, and they're the best-looking chickens we've gotten, too.
What do you say we take a little vacation after this one, Mom?
All right, son.
Good. Where'll we go?
Oh, Niagara Falls. I wanted to go there with your father, but he was always too tied up with business.
Not Niagara Falls, Mom.
Well, why not, son? It's lovely up there. I've seen the postcards.
Buffalo Cops, Mom. I'm hot up there.
Oh, yes, I forgot.
Well, there are plenty of other places.
Yeah, of course.
How about California? I'd like to go there.
Oh, no. No, I'd always be thinking about your father if we went to California. He was at San Quentin.
Well, we've got time to think about that after we get back to New York.
You know, I think we ought to stay right in New York.
Why?
Well, the papers have been saying that it's unpatriotic to take long trips by train. They need the space for soldiers.
Maybe you're right. Maybe we'll stay in New York.
Well, that car, it's forcing us off the road. Be careful, son.
It's not forcing us off the road, Mom. They want us to stop.
Why, have you been speeding?
No, Mom,
pull over, Perry.
Okay.
Well, what in the world is this, son?
Come out of there, Perry. You too, Mrs. Perry.
Well, who are you?
Special agents of the FBI.
Well, what do you want with us?
Well, you and your son seem to like chickens so much, we're going to do you a favor.
Well, what is it?
We're going to arrange for you to be sent to an institution. A place where they have chicken every Sunday.
Robert Perry and his mother, like all criminals, thought they had a foolproof scheme. A racket that was beyond being broken by the forces of law and order. Robert Perry and his mother were petty thieves. but they showed the same contempt for decency that all criminals show. The FBI gives every effort to each of its causes, no matter how small, because it knows that the one sure way to prevent crimes is to stop them from being committed. And it knows, too, that the one way to do that, the one sure way, is to keep apprehending criminals, to keep advertising what the FBI has proven time and time again, that crime does not pay. When every child knows that, when he knows it the way he knows that 2 and 2 make 4, then crime will stop. Until that day, the FBI will stay on the job.
Case in just a minute, but now, will you join the Equitable Society in a tribute to the victory which is near at hand? A tribute of gratitude and praise to the armed forces of the United States. Our fighting men have proved that free men, brought up in the ways of peace, are more than a match for the regimented millions of the aggressor nations. The victory of these representatives of democracy is, as President Truman said last night, and I quote, more than a victory of arms. It is, as he said, a victory of one way of life over another. A victory of an ideal founded on the rights of the common man, on the dignity of the human being, and on the conception of the state as the servant, not the master of its people. Tomorrow, let us hope a new era will dawn on this earth, an era in which goodwill will prevail among all men, and all men will work together for the peace and prosperity of the world. As its contribution to peace, the Equitable Society will concentrate its full resources on the great task of providing security and jobs for the men and women who have served their country so well.
Robert Perry and his mother were convicted in a federal court, and both of them were sentenced to serve time in the federal penitentiary.
The incidents used in tonight's broadcast are taken from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of persons living or dead is accidental. Programs in this series of particular interest to servicemen and women are broadcast overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Tonight, the music was under the direction of Frederick Steiner. The author was Jerry Lewis. Your narrator was Frank Lovejoy. This is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. And now this is Carl Frank speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time for This is Your FBI. This is the American Broadcasting Company.
That's going to do it for this episode of Case Closed. I hope you enjoyed the shows today. You can find more from Unit 99, This Is Your FBI, past episodes of Case Closed, and everything else Relic Radio at the website, relicradio.com. Our Shoutcast stream is there as well, and our donate button. If you'd like to help support this and all the shows, give that button a click. Your support makes all of this possible. My thanks, as always, to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.